It was a little less than 12 years ago that Anthony Bonomo Sr. took a trip to Saratoga with his wife Mary Ellen, and it sounds like Mary Ellen had to twist her husband's arm to get him to go to the track that day. But as so often happens with Saratoga visitors, he had the time of his life. Fast forward to 2017, and he has come a long way in this business, so far that he is the co-owner of one of the favorites for the Kentucky Derby, the Florida Derby winner Always Dreaming. Bonomo is our guest on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, and we'll be back with Anthony Bonomo. But first, this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
For over 40 years, buyers, sellers, and breeders alike have turned to TaylorMade for custom-fit solutions. From boarding to breeding to both public and private sales, our dedicated team stands ready to serve you. With expert advice from the Taylor brothers and their experienced team of account managers, you can count on TaylorMade to provide the personalized service you deserve and expect. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing can do for you.
This is Bill Finley, and welcome to another edition of the weekly TDN podcast. All the owners involved in the Kentucky Derby will be over the moon with excitement come Derby Day, but perhaps none more so than Anthony Bonomo. This is a guy who truly loves the game. He's won a share of races, but nothing quite like the Kentucky Derby, and his dream may just come true with the appropriately named Always Dreaming. We welcome Anthony Bonomo into our podcast. And Anthony, before we get into the horses, I'd like to know a little bit more about your background. And you grew up in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn. Your stable is named Brooklyn Boys, Boys with a Z. Put those two factors together, and I'm guessing, even though you've done quite well in this in the business world, you don't consider yourself a blue blood.
No, you know, listen, Bill, I'm from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, born, raised there. My first partner in the business was Joe Harkins, who was another Brooklyn guy. And the Z was just, I don't know, we just were having a moment at the track, and we just thought it would be cool to put a Z instead of an S. And we did it. And, you know, while you may leave Brooklyn, Brooklyn never leaves you. So I'm still that kid from Brooklyn, although it's some years later. But, you know, my friends, I still have a lot of friends there, and my co-owner in Dreaming is Vinny Viola, who's two blocks away from me. We grew up together. We know each other in excess of 50 years. So, you know, neither one of us forget where we came from and are happy to go back there and, you know, talk about our wins and, you know, talk about a lot of our losses together at our local restaurant with all our buddies. So, yeah, you know, it's exciting.
Well, Kentucky Derby win could be the best thing that happened in Brooklyn since the old Brooklyn Dodgers won the World Series before they were moved out to Los Angeles. So, as I mentioned in my opening, and I'm picking this up from a story that Dave Grenning wrote in the Racing Form a few years back when you were just getting interested in the game, it sounds like before that fateful trip to Saratoga, you were only modestly interested in racing. What was your interest level? How much did you follow the game?
Well, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, we all used to watch, you know, there was the flats in the morning and the trotters at night. And, you know, all of us being young kids and everything like that used to have some fun with it, sneak into the track at Aqueduct or at Belmont, watch the races, occasionally beg someone to put down a $2 bet for us on a horse. But, you know, it was basically our neighborhood. You know, sports was a prevalent thing, whether it be baseball or football. But the horses also played an important role in that neighborhood. A lot of people liked watching the racing and, you know, going to the races. And so you grew up with it. It was part of the fabric of what you did. And naturally, you know, as you got older, things changed. But I always used to go to the track with my father-in-law, who unfortunately passed away, and watch the races on Fridays. And, you know, it was an enjoyment thing. Never in my wildest dreams did I think, you know, I would eventually own a racehorse. So it was kind of interesting.
So what did change that day that your wife said, hey, Anthony, we're going to Saratoga today?
Well, it didn't come easy. You know, my wife and her dad were super close, and she loved the horses with him. And, you know, she was begging me for years to take a ride up to Saratoga. And, you know, being a Brooklyn boy, I was like, wow, that's so far up and it's the country. I'd never been to Saratoga, nor did I ever see a race up there. So I said, well, what are we going to do up there? And she said, well, the races are pretty nice. And I said, well, you know, eventually when your wife asks you a few times, it goes from an ask to a mild, you know, insist. But we did it. And thankful I was that we did, because Saratoga is just an unbelievable place. Taking away the racing, it's still an unbelievable place. And to my liking, then, you know, being at the track, and everybody knows the history of Saratoga and that track and how special it is, I guess that day I got the bug after my wife said, you know, it would be neat. I'd love to own a racehorse. Didn't have a clue what it meant, what to do, but found out. And in that day, between the first race and the last race, my friend and I, who was up there with us, developed the name Brooklyn Boys, developed our silks.
Wow.
Went and get licensed, or, you know, fingerprinted and all the things you have to do. And then 2 weeks later, we bought our first racehorse. So, you know, I guess when we're winning, I got to give all my wife all the credit, you know, because she's the one who put us into it. And then, you know, the whole family fell in love with it. And fortunate to have Vinny, a lifelong friend, as a partner in a lot of horses, and his wife, Teresa, and their whole family. I mean, we're very, very close. And it's about racing, but it's more than that. It's unbelievable to share this with people you love. It really is.
I'm sure it is. It sounds like that. Now, when you started out largely with cheaper horses and New York breds. Why that approach, and when did you decide to start going after higher quality horses?
Well, you know, when you start out in something and you don't know a lot about it, you know, you sort of wade in, and that was the first step. You know, we bought two small horses, and believe it or not, the first one we bought, the first race it ran, it won. And so the feeling of running a race and then winning was unlike anything I've ever experienced, still is, whether it be a claiming race or, you know, where we are now with some horses. And I don't know, it just got me. And then we decided to, you know, my son got into the game. He was an assistant trainer with Dominic Schettino for a while. Left the game, went to law school, and is in law school. And it just seemed like a natural progression, buy a little better horses, you know, do some things different. And, you know, when you get the bug, you get the bug. And now it's just part of our family fabric. I mean, we talk racing more than we talk probably anything else.
Now, the difference in your stable vis-a-vis the 10 years ago or so that we're talking about, or 12 years ago versus today, is there seems to be a difference in quality and quantity aspects. You have a lot fewer horses than you used to have, but you have better horses. Was that by design? Was that the plan, that, you know, we can only go so far with $25,000 claimers? I will want to play at the high level.
No, you know, it came with experience and learning. You know, horse racing is a tough business, and many people who are in it know that. It came about learning more about the game, you know, and understanding that sometimes quantity isn't the same as quality. And so, and you know, there's no rhyme or reason that if you spend X, the horse wins, and if you spend Y, it doesn't. It just naturally progressed into that. And, you know, I realized, you know, it's after a little learning thing that, you know, it doesn't matter how many you own. It matters how many good ones you own. And so I owe a lot to the trainers, Dominic Schettino, and you know, the people I worked with to teach me that, because it, you know, wasn't what I knew. And, you know, thankfully, you know, we were in racing with the right people around us, people who cared. You know, you can't say enough about Jimmy Krippe and what he does down on his farm in Ocala. And then to have, you know, the right bloodstock agent, Steve Young and Chris Brothers. You know, we've been very fortunate to have good people around us who have taught us every day about the game. And then naturally having a partner like Vinny, you know, I can't say enough about how fortunate I've been in my family to have these people around us.
Well, in 2015, Brooklyn Boys Stable made a big splash with a horse by the name of Greenpoint Crusader. That'll be among the subjects we'll look at after this message from our good friends at TaylorMade.
Attention sellers, now's the time to start preparing for the upcoming yearling sales, and putting your yearlings on the path to success begins right now. As the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, the expert team at TaylorMade knows what it takes to succeed at public auction. So if you're ready to get top dollar for your yearlings in 2017, visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
As they come toward the top of the stretch, Sunny Ridge all out. On the far outside, Portfolio Manager is next. Greenpoint Crusader coming wide. Magnolite and Sail Ahoy, and they're into the stretch, and it's Sunny Ridge. Sunny Ridge looking to pull off an upset in the Champagne. Coming into the final furlong with Greenpoint Crusader bearing down on him. And Greenpoint Crusader has gone by, and he is pulling away now. Greenpoint Crusader and Joe Bravo are going to win the Champagne with ease.
Greenpoint Crusader winning the 2015 Champagne Stakes for Brooklyn Boys Stable. And Anthony, that was your first big horse, your first grade one win. What was that feeling like?
I still get goosebumps when I listen to it. It was unbelievable. You know, Vinny and I, we named the horse Greenpoint Crusader after the neighborhood we came from and after the football, peewee football teams we played for. It was unreal. You know, your whole family's there jumping, acting crazy. You know, watching grown people enjoy this and acting like children is amazing. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but, you know, I was doing gyrations I've never done. It was special. It was special, you know. It was our first big win. We had a filly before that ran in the Breeders' Cup named Connie and Michael, who had won a couple of nice races, and it was a super filly. But, you know, winning that race and then afterwards, you know, stealing the trophy and taking with us to our local restaurant in Brooklyn and all our friends showing up, I think we enjoyed that as much as the win. And you know, and at Greenpoint, unfortunately for us, the year after it was on the Derby trail and unfortunately injured himself. He's back running now, and I think he'll be a force again. And, you know, when you walk away from that injury and you're so close to the Derby a month before, you know, you just say, oh, God, that was our chance. And, oh, you know, you sort of get down. But, you know, to me, you know, the health of the horse was the most important thing to me. These animals are spectacular, unbelievable athletes. They get treated tremendously. But they become part of your fabric. And so, you know, when one gets a little injured, you feel it. And it wasn't about making the Derby. It was now about, you know, we hope Greenpoint's okay. And thank God after some time off, he's back and he's doing well. But it was a magical moment. And then, you know, to come back this year and have Always Dreaming, so appropriately named by my wife, it's just a dream come true. No pun intended. It just is. You're always dreaming when you're in this business. Whenever you buy a horse, you're always dreaming. And it's not just to horse racing. I mean, don't we? Everybody's dreaming. That little league kid is always dreaming he's going to be the next, you know, Tom Seaver, Willie Mays, or whoever's prevalent in baseball or anything we do. So the name was so great. And then naturally, for this horse to take off like it did, it's amazing. You know, it's hard to describe. It really is.
Now I want to go back to Greenpoint Crusader because, you know, you very articulately described your feelings about winning that race. And we had talked earlier about how, you know, you kind of moved away from the claimers and the cheaper horses and are looking for that horse that can perform in grade one races. Did Greenpoint Crusader whet your appetite for that? Did he just leave you with a thirst for, I've got to have more of this?
Well, you know, I think before Greenpoint and we had Connie, you know, when you start running and you start seeing, you know, these big races and people winning them, you start saying, geez, why not me? Why? How do I do that? And then you're lucky enough to talk to the right people and then start thinking about how do you get there? And, you know, I don't pretend to tell you right now, you know, I could look at a horse and tell you, oh, this is the one, because I liken it a lot to, you know, I've been told, and it's so apropos, it's like going into a kindergarten class, looking at the kids, and saying this kid's going to be a doctor, this kid's going to be a lawyer, this kid's going to be this. There's an element of luck in it, but there also is a lot of people out there who make this their living, and I'm fortunate to have them involved with us to help us develop. So, you know, watching the big races and then dreaming about wanting to be in them and one day hoping to win them, and then being fortunate enough to, you know, get a horse like Connie and a couple of other ones who have, you know, we had a horse that's all relevant who won the Albany Stakes. And, you know, the progression starts happening, and, you know, let's face it, there's nothing like winning. You know, I was saying in the Florida Derby after, as we were going to the track, someone said to me, I hope your horse runs well. And I was so appreciative to hear that. But deep down, you say, I want him to run well, too, and I want him to come back healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the right word, but I want him to run weller than everyone.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I want to win.
There you go.
And your juices, your competitive juices from growing up in Brooklyn, you know, we competed at everything, whether it be stickball, punchball. And, you know, everybody wants to win. And so you realize how lucky you are to be in a race like that. And, of course, the health of your horse is first. And then, naturally, you want to win. And if you're lucky enough to win, it's a great thing. But then again, you put it in perspective if you didn't win, and you put it in perspective about life and what's going on in this world and how we have, you know, the first responders who protect us every day and the soldiers who, you know, make sure that we can enjoy the things we do. And then it comes, you know, it comes full circle. So, you know, I never forget what's going on in this world and how this is a piece of it. But there's so much going on. So you got to keep it in perspective.
Gotcha. Now, you talked so much about your friendship with Vince Viola, very well-known person in both racing and in other enterprises, very successful businessman, happens to own the Florida Panthers. Explain the partnership that you have with him now. Are you guys together on all the horses that you're involved with? Are you only involved in partnership with him on some horses? Explain how that works.
Well, first let me say this about Vinny Viola. His success in business pales in comparison to the person he is and his family, his wife Teresa and his children. If you know Vinny Viola, you'd know that no matter what he does business-wise or successfully, matters to him as much as it does for what he does for people and the soldiers. You know, he's an army man. He went to West Point. So if you're lucky enough to know that side of Vinny, you know you got a friend that'll do anything for you, but more importantly, does anything to help people. So we've always been such good friends and talked, and we did lose some contact with each other during the college years. But then, you know, we got back together in horse racing, and then we decided let's do a horse together. And then it just became apparent to both of us that we should do something with our stables, and our wives are such friends and our children. So we merged the four stables because our wives each
right.
have one too. And truthfully, I was getting tired of my wife's stable beating me all the time. So we merged the four stables and we went partners. Now, Vinny has more horses than I do, but we're in partners in a good bunch of them. And, you know, it's great. You know, we talk a lot about him. You know, Vinny's just Vinny. And if you went back to the old neighborhood, they would tell you there's nobody like him that comes back there. And it doesn't matter about his successes. It matters about sitting in our local restaurant and eating something and talking about the neighborhood. You know, we talk so much and reminisce so much about our old days in Brooklyn and the things we did as kids growing up that it's great because, you know, it's more than the horses. But the horses are fun. We're having a lot of fun together.
Now, I noticed when, unless it was a misprint or something, when Always Dreaming was bought at the sales for $350,000 at Keeneland September, and your wife's stable were listed as the owners only. There was no mention of St. Elias or Vinny Viola. What was he in at the ground floor, or at some point did you say, "Hey, Vinny, I got a good horse. I want you on board with him."
No, actually, what happened was the year before Greenpoint Crusader, I was bidding on Greenpoint Crusader and stopped. And Vinny had found out, and kept going. And we weren't thinking about doing anything. And he called me and he said, hey, I heard you were buying, looking at that Horse Green Point Crusade. And I said, yeah, I did. I said, but I stopped. You know, he was getting a little bit up there. And then he said, well, I bought him. We're partners. And let's go.
Okay.
And then, you know, we started doing our racing and Green Point was doing good. And then, you know, last summer we just talked about, you know, let's put our stables together. And I had had Dreamin' and a couple of other horses, and, you know, Dreamin' was a great buy. He you know, Steve Young and Chris Brothers had seen him. Jimmy Krupe had loved him, and I said, boy, when those three guys like him. And then at the time, my trainer, Dominic Cittino, loved him. And my son said, Dad, I think we should buy him. And I said, okay. And it was actually my son who was bidding on him because I was in a meeting. And, you know, I got a text, hey, congratulations, you bought this horse. And I said, that's great. And I looked and I said, boy, my son spent more than he should have. And which he tends to do from time to time. But, you know, he's a great kid. He loves the horse racing business. And so does my daughters and everything. So it just turned out that last summer Vinny and I were talking and, you know, we just started talking and we made the move. It was more of a business move to put our stables together. And we don't look at who picked out a horse or who got them. These are our horses. The day we joined stable, they're our horses. And, you know, Vinny's had some great ones. You know, he won the Breeders' Cup last year with Liam's Map. He's had Ring Weekend. He's had, you know, Sweet Loretta. The list goes on and on. But we just decided to do it. We picked out a bunch of horses that we were going to partner on, and we did. And this was just one of the ones in there. And you know what? I have to tell you, it's great. It, there's no one I could think of that I'd rather be standing in the winner's circle than with Vinny and Teresa and their kids. And so I'm tickled. I'm dreaming, and I hate to keep saying it because it is. It's amazing.
Now, when you were on your own, and you mentioned Dominic Cittino was your trainer, your son was his assistant trainer, when you teamed up with Vinny, the decision was made to move the horses to his trainer, Todd Pletcher. And I know you had a very close relationship with Dominic Cittino. Your son even worked for him. That could not have been fun to have that conversation with Dominic and say, Dominic, I'm going in another direction. Can you talk about that, and how difficult was that?
Sure. Dominic's still a great friend. Dominic's an underrated trainer. He did tremendous for us. It wasn't about training. It's just when we made the business move, Vinny was, you know, had more horses. He had them with Todd and I think Chad at that time. And he just, you know, we talked it over, and it was hard. It was a hard decision. But it was one, you know, that Vinny thought we should try. And I didn't argue. We couldn't argue. We really, it was heart wrenching for both of us. But it was the decision just to be made, and you know, it was a tough one. Like I said, I can't say that Dominic did anything wrong. I think Dominic was fantastic. He did a great job. Remember, you know, the horses we started with weren't exactly horses that were easy to get to the races and win with, and so I think Dominic, you know, he did a great job, but it was just a business move. And, you know, it's what it is. You know, the racing business is crazy. One day you're here, the next day you're gone. And so, yeah, it was tough. But I know that, you know, Dominic's out there and wants nothing but the best for us. And likewise, I want nothing but the best for him.
Now, again, as we mentioned, your son, named Anthony Jr., was his assistant trainer. And going back to articles written 4 or 5 years ago, there was some mention that he eventually would rise to the level of being a professional trainer and would train your horses. Now you tell us he's decided to go to law school. First of all, where is he going to law school? And is there any chance he'll gravitate back to the racetrack?
You know, he goes to St. John's Law School. He's finishing his second year now. Yeah, I think for Anthony, it just became, you know, it's a tough business, and it's very hard. And he always wanted to do something more. He's never satisfied with what he's doing. So I think, yes, at one point he thought about being a trainer. It's a tough life, tough on families, tough on the trainers. The ups and downs of racing are unbelievable. And I don't know. I think maybe that my middle girl going to law school and becoming a lawyer maybe pushed them a little bit. But, you know, I'm very fortunate. My three kids are all successful in their own right with a lawyer. I have a vet tech and Anthony in law school. I just think that he decided that was a better choice for him. But he's still involved actively when he can spare the time and he's not studying. He's still involved actively when we're looking at horses, when we're talking about horses, you know, when we're thinking about what we're going to do. And I think as law school ends, he'll go on to do law, but I also think he'll still stay very active in the horse business. It's great to have your son by your side. And truthfully, I owe a lot of credit to him because he's got a great eye. He knows more, way more about it. You know, I'm getting all the accolades just because I wrote a check, to be honest with you. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are responsible for always dreaming, you know, being where he is. And we cannot, you know, sell short the management of this horse on the job that Todd and Vinny and, you know, Johnny V have done managing this horse to get where he is. A lot of critics about the route that was taken for him. But I'm not one of them. I think we're where we wanted to be. It's exactly, I think, what Todd had talked about and what Vinny had talked about with him. So, you know, I'm enjoying the ride, but, you know, there's a lot of other guys steering the ship. So, you know, it's just great.
And now, speaking of your son, you said he was the one who made the bid on Always Dreaming, and you let it be known that you were a little miffed that he spent $350, which was more than you wanted to spend. How do you look at it now? Now are you saying you're a genius kid?
Well, I don't know if I said so much about him being a genius, but I can say this. What a great move.
Right.
And, you know, if hindsight was foresight, how good would we all be? But, you know... You know, Anthony's always gone a little over when he was supposed to be anyway. But, you know, look, you know, you buy some and you lose, you buy some and you win. And in this business, I think you have to appreciate, you know, how hard it is and how, you know, if you have a 15% win percentage, you're fantastic. Mm-hmm. So think about that, you know. But... You know, I never second-guessed him. He has a keen eye. He deals with our bloodstock agents. And, you know, after this, I don't know how I'm going to deal with him. But, you know, we'll figure that out later.
Right. And Anthony, just within this interview, you've already talked about your passion for the animal. And for those of you, for those people who already knew you, already knew that that was a very important thing for you. You've been very outspoken about horse welfare issues, about protecting the animals, protecting the jockeys, etc. Racing has had a really good news story recently when the Jockey Club released statistics showing that equine fatalities are going down dramatically in recent years. And I just want to know, for somebody who's been involved with NYRA in looking into this subject, and is also, again, as I said, somebody who cares quite a bit about it, do you have a theory why it's good news? Why is it happening?
Well, you know, when I was on the NYRA board, I chaired that committee. And to me, one breakdown's too many. But we do realize we're in a sport where, unfortunately, this is going to happen. But, you know, we have to understand that these animals, these horses are born to run. You ever watch them as babies or yearlings in a field? They're not standing around. They're running. So it's in their blood. I mean, they're racehorses. But I still think we as humans have an obligation, you know, to take care of them to the very best we can. And I think what happened was, you know, in New York and around the country, you know, the welfare of the horse was becoming, you know, very, very important. Not that it never was, but, you know, with some of the things that happened, some of the, you know, breakdowns and the Barbaros and the Eight Bells and things like that. I don't think people really knew how much owners, trainers, and the track people really, really cared about the welfare of these horses. Because, you know, you see a breakdown, it's catastrophic. Look, I've had them. You know, I've had them where horses break down and I can't go to the track for 3 days. I can't even go to the barn. I keep every horse that I ever owned their nameplate. And if, God forbid, one broke down, I keep their halter and they're hanging in my home. So it's traumatic. But I think what's happened happened is the focus has become on quality racing, not the amount of horses that are in a race, but the amount of horses that belong in a race. You know, a horse doesn't know its competition. It just knows to run and to run as hard as it can. And I think, you know, when the focus became on having, you know, there was no mandate on how many horses had to be in a race for the betting public. It became what horses belonged in the race and were they over-trying, which sometimes led to injuries. And I think the science has gotten greater. I do believe that the whole racing world now has joined together in a common cause to try and protect these beautiful animals. And it's always been in the forefront with me of wanting to see all the stalls full with the horses that were there and not one missing because of a tragic ending. And so, you know, I think that we have to remember, you know, that there's a common cause and we should be caring about that. And never should it go unmentioned about what I call, you know, the unsung heroes in racing,
mm-hmm.
who are the grooms, the hot walkers, and the exercise riders, who are around these horses a lot more than we are, and who protect them, take care of them. You know, they do such a great job, but they go so unnoticed. And you know, I've always been a champion of their causes because I believe we owe it to them. They work real hard. I wouldn't be able to do what they do. And the pride that they take in a horse when it runs and wins, or the sadness that they take when, God forbid, a horse goes down, you don't see it. You know, the public doesn't see it. I see it when it happens because I go to the barn. And I've seen grown men and women cry when a horse gets injured and goes down because they're the grooms. Or actually, sometimes when you retire a horse and that groom is walking that horse to the trailer because he's going to be retired somewhere and he's crying. So, you know, we can't forget all this stuff that goes into racing. You know, it's nice Saturday afternoon. It's lovely to watch those races. But there's so much to racing that people don't get to see or know. And it's unfortunate because it really is good. And so, you know, I think it's our obligation to take care of these magnificent animals. I think we are. I think we're doing a lot more. And I believe that, you know, it's led to the great statistics we're seeing. And, you know, we can't forget that there's also a human being on those horses' back.
Absolutely.
And we don't want to see them get hurt either.
Absolutely.
They're unbelievable athletes. Unbelievable athletes, too.
Well, it's time to take a look at the Always Dreaming story, which is what we'll do after this message from TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, is your number one source offering the full spectrum of bloodstock services. With over four decades of experience and the industry's top resources, TaylorMade has the power to help you achieve your loftiest goals. Last year, horses consigned by TaylorMade sold for nearly double the general market average. So if you're looking to get the most for your yearlings, make 2017 the year you give TaylorMade a try. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
Quarter of a mile left to go. Into the stretch they come. Always Dreaming settles into the lane, very confidently handled. He's still under a hand ride by Johnny V, who's looking around for competition, and there just is not any to find. From the outside, Unbridled Holiday tries to get second with Charlie the Greek boxing on. Fire for effect at the inside. Always Dreaming stylishly in the opener. He won it by 3.5.
That was March 4th at Gulfstream, and Always Dreaming first showed in that race that he might belong on the Triple Crown Trail when winning allowance race at Gulfstream. But the time of the race, 1:53.2, was really slow, and the buyer number was, I believe, in the 70s. Anthony, did you see that as a breakthrough race, or did you have some concerns about things that people were talking about he didn't run that fast?
No, you know, a lot of people talk about a lot of things and the numbers. And, you know, I see them, I look at them. But, you know, I really focus on what my trainer says and what the rider says. And, you know, I think that, you know, the management of the horse, if you watch this first race in Tampa, and actually if you watch this two-year-old races, you know, the horse showed a lot of potential from the first day he got on the track. So I wasn't concerned with the numbers because the race, if you watch the race, it's what he had to do. And, you know, he did what he had to do to win. You know, I think what this horse has shown is that he can rate, he can go on the lead. He's a very versatile horse, and he's very receptive to what the jock asks him to do. And so, you know, he's an intelligent horse. So, you know, the numbers have never really, maybe I just don't know enough to focus on them. But I've always liked, you know, what my trainer tells me. And so, you know, Todd wasn't concerned with the numbers at all. He said he would have liked to have seen him get a little more out of the race. But he felt very confident that the horse would, you know, improve. And his works after that were super. And so going into the Derby, we were, you know, you're always cautiously optimistic. Anything can happen in a race. I've always said that the best horse doesn't always win every race. There has to be a lot of race luck and a lot of things that go right. But going into the Derby, I think we felt that, you know, as far as what the humans can do, training him and getting him ready, he was ready. Now it was up to him, you know, to perform in that race. And, you know, you never know. But I will tell you, when he made the turn and I saw where he was and I saw Johnny just let out a little rain and him respond like that, I thought at that point in time, and thank God no one's watching the Twitter. Someone took a tape of me in the box that day of him coming home. And thank God that hasn't gone viral because, you know, I guess the excitement was getting to me and I was jumping up and down, I guess like most people do. But, you know, if I had watched that, I would have said, Anthony, what are you doing? But it was a nice thing. You know, it was nice there to, you know, your wife jumps on your arms and your son's on your back and, you know, your friends and family and Vinny and all there. And, you know, you're doing what you're supposed to do. I mean, when you win a race like that, to carry on a little bit, I think it just shows the excitement of what it's like to be in the racing business. And maybe it makes some people, you know, watch and say, you know, we should get into it. I think racing needs more people coming in and the young people to understand it. And, you know, because they're the future of racing. So I don't know if that Twitter of me jumping up and down is going to do that. But, you know, it was an exciting day.
Gunnifer is into fifth, but still a long way off the lead. And the lead is now held by Always Dreaming. Always Dreaming set down for the drive by John Velasquez. And he's moving away. State of Honor is up into second. An impressive edge. Gunnifer too little, too late. But inside the 16th pole, the 2017 Florida Derby to Todd Pletcher. And Always Dreaming, they won it by four in the end.
All right, we can forget about that slow allowance race. Always Dreaming is for real. He wins the Florida Derby and did something that somebody pointed out to me they've never seen before in horse racing. Ran consecutive races at the same distance and ran 6 seconds faster. And Anthony, did you see that kind of improvement coming in this horse? Did you feel when he crossed the finish line in the Florida Derby, now we've seen the real Always Dreaming?
You know, the timing, I didn't know. I didn't know the time of the race. But I think he did what he had to do both races. And I think that's the first race Johnny's really said to him, all right, let's see what you can do. I think the two races before, Johnny made him do what he had to do in order to win, but didn't really, you know, use him a lot. And in this race, Johnny, you know, again, masterfully just made him do what he had to do. And, you know, when I found out the time, you know, to be honest with you, I was kind of surprised that that time was so fast and, you know, a couple of ticks off the track record set by Ali Dar in that race. But, you know, each race takes a life of its own. And, you know, he galloped out great and he was training great up to that. I don't know if we've seen the best of him. I guess next week we'll know, you know, can he get better? And I think he has to get a little bit better because, you know, each race the competition gets better. And, you know, there's no slouches in this race. You have to respect the trainers and the owners and the other horses that are in the Kentucky Derby. I think all of us, you know, want one thing is to win and hopefully that every horse stays sound. But, you know, there's a lot of talent in this race, from the jockeys to the horses to the trainers. And so, you know, there's no given that a time is the winning time. As you know, we've seen all different times in all these different races. with a lot of quality winners and a lot of quality trainers and a lot of quality horses. So I don't know what it's going to take. I just hope whatever it takes, it's all horse running it, you know. So, you know, I hope he's training well. He looks good. I hope his effort that day is good enough to get him the W.
Anthony, you've aligned yourself with Todd Pletcher, and he needs no introduction. This is one of the most talented trainers in the history of the sport. However, there's this huge monkey on his back, the 1-for-45 in the Kentucky Derby. And I guess you could look at it a few different ways. Todd's overdue. I've said many a time the guy's going to win 10 Kentucky Derbies before he retires. But any part of that, you know, just sort of negative mojo when it comes to the Derby and Todd, does that worry you at all?
No. No. First of all, you got to realize, here's a guy who could have 5 horses in this race. Only one could win. So even if he won, it's 20%.
Right.
So I think statistics can be skewed also, because if you have more than one horse in a race, but think of the talent to get that many horses into a race like this. There are people who have been in the business 10 years haven't won that many races. So no, I don't look at negative vibes. I think if you start looking at negative vibes, you know, it's something, you know, that you shouldn't really think of in anything in life. Todd, to me, you know, his numbers, you know, we can skew numbers. We could talk about numbers. We could talk about a lot of things, but I think you have to first look at, okay, he's had 45 horses in the Derby. How many times have he had multiple runners in a Derby? You know, I don't know. I'm not a student of this, but when Super Saver won, did he have others? So let's say he had 2 others. He was 1-for-3 that day. So those things, you know, I don't look at that because I think every year, every race, you know, stands on itself. I'm just looking at the quality of a man, his ability to get horses into big races and win. So, you know, I don't think if we can argue with the numbers that Todd Pletcher has, nor do I worry about him.
Well, Anthony, congratulations with the success you've had already with Always Dreaming. Good luck in the Kentucky Derby. You've been a great guest on our TDN podcast. We thank you so much for your time. Go get them at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May.
Hey, Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you.